Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Memoir includes a lot of different elements, specifically self-reflection. I mean, that's key to memoir. First, the emotional truth, but then the self-reflection. What do I know now that I didn't know before? What were my beliefs in the past? What were my drives? What were my desires? Maybe I didn't even know because they could have been unconscious. So what do I know now? And what am I willing to really look at in this piece of memoir?
That was Maureen Murdoch on Psychologists Off the Clock. We are four experts in psychology here to bring you cutting-edge and science-based ideas from psychology to help you flourish in your relationships, work, and health.
I'm Dr. Debbie Sorensen, a clinical psychologist practicing in Mile High, Denver, Colorado, and author of Act for Burnout, Act Daily Journal, and the Act Daily Card Deck.
From America's Heartland, I'm Dr. Emily Edlin, a clinical psychologist based in Chicago, Illinois, and author of Autonomy Supportive Parenting.
Calling in from Vienna, Austria, I'm Michael Herold, ACT coach, confidence trainer, and author of an upcoming book on being a better conversationalist and making friends.
And from coastal New England, I'm Dr. Jill Stoddard, author of Be Mighty, The Big Book of ACT Metaphors, and Imposter No More.
We hope you take what you learn here to build a rich and meaningful life.
Thank you for listening to Psychologists Off the Clock.
Hi, everyone. This is Debbie, and I'm here with Jill today. We're going to introduce an episode that I am bringing you with our guest, Maureen Murdoch, who wrote a book recently. It's just coming out called Myth-Making, Self-Discovery, and the Timeless Art of Memoir. And in the interview, we talk a lot about the value of writing in terms of, you know, kind of some personal growth and therapeutic uses and how writing can be helpful to us. And Jill, I wanted to talk to you about this as we both write a lot and we both are therapists. And so let me turn it to you, Jill, to ask you this question. How have you found writing to be helpful for personal growth?
Immensely. I mean, you know, the writing I guess people would be familiar with that I've done is nonfiction psychology writing, but I do a lot of creative writing on the side. Much of which is personal essay, which is, you know, a short version of memoir, pretty much the same thing. And where I found it to be the most useful has been, you know, during times where I'm going through something. And even if I'm going to therapy, I'm just like not even sure how I'm feeling or what to talk about. It just feels maybe kind of buried. And writing has helped with that. And, you know, what I find just fascinating about the writing process is you talk with Maureen about using writing prompts, and that's a really common thing that writers do. And it could be anything. It could be talk about your favorite room in your house or something, and it might seem like it has nothing to do with psychology. But in my experience, what I found, I've written too many prompts, and no matter the prompt, my mind goes where it needs to go. So for example, I'm not sure I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but I have a little brother who I grew up very, very close to, and he's in prison. And that was an absolutely devastating time for my family when everything came to light about what was going on with him. And we were all coping with it in different ways. So the only people who knew what was going on were coping in different ways. So it was hard to like really support each other. And I found myself doing a lot of writing. And no matter the prompt, I would end up writing about my brother because it's just like where my heart and soul and mind needed to go to process what was happening. And funnily enough, one thing I think I have talked about on the podcast is I wrote essays for like 10 years and submitted them and none of them ever got published. And it wasn't until I wrote an essay about my brother that one of those got published. And I think it's, you know, it's because it was like so vulnerable and heartfelt. So yeah, I really see tremendous value in using writing in a number of different ways, but especially essay and memoir writing for processing psychological content.
Well, and to actually tie what you're saying to some evidence-based psychology, there are some therapies out there that draw a lot on writing. I'm thinking of expressive writing as an example. Pennebaker, you know, this has been around a long time and there's solid evidence. And expressive writing is where you process thoughts and feelings about something that you face in life. Often it's used for trauma. And in fact, I've often used written exposure therapy with my clients who have had a trauma because you tap into your thoughts and feelings about a traumatic event that you experienced. And I've trained in many different approaches to working with PTSD over the years. And I found that it is a very powerful way. It's actually my preferred method of working with PTSD at this point, and it's evidence-based and it draws off expressive writing. And I certainly have a number of clients who are writing between sessions. Sometimes people bring in their journals or it's something that they want to start doing more of. And I have found it helpful in my own life as well.
Yeah. And you don't have to be a writer to write.
Exactly.
And you don't have to have any idea in your mind what you're going to write about. I mean, and I think that's why prompts can be helpful because it just gives you a starting point.
Yes.
And just start. Like if the prompt is something as silly as describe your favorite room in the house, you're going to start talking about, you know, I'm in my office. I would talk about how much I love my chandelier and my navy blue walls. And then that thought is going to go to the next, to the next, to the next. And before you know it, you're going to be delving deep into other things. It's really just a way to get started that can be really helpful. Even if you have no idea what you're going to use writing for, you will go somewhere if you just give the process a chance.
That's right. And you can keep it to yourself. You never have to share it with anyone, or you can do it in a group. There are groups where people, and actually we can link to some resources about all of this on our show notes today. Some groups, I know some therapeutic writing groups that happen. Maureen has some groups. We'll post some information about expressive writing and some of these other things. When I was an intern, I worked at a VA out in Massachusetts, Jill, where you live now.
Yeah.
And we had this autobiographical memory group. And each week they would go write about memories from their life. And I mean, these guys were like 90-year-old veterans. And they would come back in and they would read their stories to each other. They got so into it. And it was a way, I think, at that stage of life of reflecting back on some of their experiences and to hear their stories. I mean, it was just, I will never forget that group. It was one of the most meaningful experiences. And for them, I mean, they spent hours working on these writing assignments between.
Well, it's very connecting, right? I mean, you know, when you write, you get vulnerable and vulnerability is what connects each other.
Yeah.
I love that.
It can be a way of connecting with other people to do it in a group. But sometimes you want to just do it for yourself and nobody has to see it. You know, you can have terrible grammar. You can throw it in the garbage can when you're done. Or not, pass it on to your kids, grandkids, you know. So it's a very personal process, I find. And there's no one right way to do this type of writing.
There are some people like in memoir writing circles that suggest you not choose to write about something you're still really actively working on, that like it shouldn't be used in place of therapy or as therapy, that like sometimes you need a little bit of distance before you can have the appropriate perspective to write like essays and memoir that you actually want to publish. But that doesn't mean you can't use writing in a therapeutic way to process some of what you're working on. But you know, if it's something that's like happening and raw, it might be helpful to also do that with a therapist.
It's interesting that you're saying this. I remember reading a Hemingway book years ago, and this stayed with me, that he was like in Paris writing about his childhood. And later he was somewhere else, I don't know, Florida or something, who knows, writing about Paris and how he couldn't write about the place where he was. He had to kind of write about it later. That's maybe why memoir is helpful, because we have to write about something that happened in the past to process it in a way that we couldn't at the time.
At the time, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I also loved that, you know, you guys talked about how you don't have to have like a crazy adventurous life in order to start writing about your life. And I was in the car texting Debbie saying, I don't want to forget this quote that you said during the episode, but you said, I think the best memoirs are written by ordinary people writing it in an interesting way. And that is spot on. And, you know, we can all write in an interesting way about our life experiences.
And if you want to try this out, stay tuned to the end of the episode because Maureen gives some very practical guidance for how to get started, how to do this. So definitely keep listening for that part. Okay. Well, we hope you enjoy the conversation with Maureen and that it inspires you to think about perhaps doing a little bit of personal writing for yourself. Maureen Murdoch is the author of several books, including her new book, Mythmaking, Self-Discovery and the Timeless Art of Memoir, as well as the best-selling book, The Heroine's Journey, which explores the rich territory of the feminine psyche and has been translated into 20 languages. That's amazing. Maureen teaches memoir for the International Women's Writing Guild and in Pacifica Graduate Institute's program, Writing Down the Soul. Maureen was chair and core faculty of the MA counseling program at Pacifica Graduate Institute. She has written pieces for the Huffington Post on the criminal justice system. She has a PhD in mythological studies with an emphasis on depth psychology and leads memoir writing retreats and workshops on the heroine's journey. First of all, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Debbie.
We'll talk a little bit more about this at the end, but you have some memoir writing retreats coming up soon, I believe.
Right, April 25th through the 27th in Santa Fe. And it's focused on the new book, Mythmaking, and looking at memoir through the lens of myth.
Great.
Yeah, it's for women.
Okay, for women. We'll give your information about your website and that type of thing at the end of our conversation today. But let's dive in. I want to kind of start by talking about that intersection between your role as a therapist, because you're a practicing therapist and have been, working in this field for a long time, and you're a Jungian psychotherapist, which I think comes into play with the memoir work you're doing as well. And you also teach writing and you write yourself. And so I'm wondering if you could just give me your thoughts on whether you think writing can be therapeutic, and how does writing help us with healing and growth?
Okay, great question. I think particularly memoir writing can be used as an adjunct to therapy, because what you're doing as a memoirist is really diving deeply to look at the different patterns in your life. And that can open up a whole new way of approaching a memoir. I have an example of a student who recently started writing after the death of Sinead O'Connor, which opened up for her memories of being an adolescent listening to Sinead and identifying with her anger, particularly against the Catholic Church. And so she's also bringing that to therapy because she's realizing how much of her anger hasn't been expressed and how important the writing is. So that's one thing. Another client of mine who has for years brought up this image of the 18-month-old child herself holding on to her crib, calling to her mother, who abandoned her at 18 months. And in writing about it, she began to realize how that's a recurring pattern in her life and her inability to trust relationship because she feels like she's always going to be left. So I see memoir as an adjunct to therapy, particularly since people can write their feelings now that they perhaps never got to express in the past.
And is memoir, how is it different from just regular journaling that people do? I mean, is it that piece around the past that's important? Or like, how would you even define memoir specifically?
Well, memoir is very different than journaling, and it's also different than autobiography. Autobiography, you're writing from birth to present time, probably in a very linear way. Memoir, you're looking at a slice of life from your particular point of view. You're crafting it. Journaling, you're just getting your thoughts down, perhaps on a daily basis. But memoir includes a lot of different elements, specifically self-reflection. I mean, that's key to memoir. First, the emotional truth, but then the self-reflection. What do I know now that I didn't know before? What were my beliefs in the past? What were my drives? What were my desires? Maybe I didn't even know because they could have been unconscious. So what do I know now? And what am I willing to really look at in this piece of memoir? The other thing about memoir is you are putting yourself back in the scene of who you were at a particular time, noticing the smells, the tastes, the textures, the sounds, your place, so that you are moving back into scene as well as your reader.
I want to read a quote that I loved so much from the book. I underlined it and then I wrote it down in my own journal to keep it with me, because I think it speaks to what you're talking about. Here's the quote. "We all need to tell our story and to understand our story. We all need to understand our passage from birth to life and then to death. We need our life to signify, to touch the eternal, to understand the mysterious, to find out who we are."
Right.
And so it's kind of like touching that over the course of time and helping you from today's point of view to look back and make sense of things, make meaning out of what's happened to you so far.
Exactly. Memoir is about making meaning. You know, that's the key to memoir. Not all memoirs do that, but those who really take time to craft their memoir, you know, usually do. The other thing about memoir that I was thinking about, I think memoir and mindfulness have a lot in common. The root of mindfulness and the root of memory are the same. And that's what we're doing with memoir writing. We're following a memory, or we're following an image where it takes us. A lot of people come into memoir writing thinking, having an agenda, and I always ask them to let go of the agenda, because that gets in the way of really diving deep into the memory.
It's interesting you say that, because I think I do find writing to be meditative, not all kinds of writing. You know, then I think sometimes when I'm doing work-related writing, it feels like a chore, but when I'm doing personal writing and it's kind of free-flowing, it does, to me, have a little bit of that mindfulness, meditative quality to it. That's another therapeutic part of it, that there's something about that type of, it's different than, you know, observing the breath type of mindfulness, but it does, it sort of tunes you into a different element of your experience, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. The wonderful thing about memoir is putting yourself in the chair, putting yourself in the environment that you were at the time that the incident occurred. And a lot of feelings come up from that. People are always very surprised that when they write a memoir, and particularly if they read a piece, if it's a group or it's just one-on-one, when they're witnessed, feelings come up that they didn't express at the time because they were just going through life, but taking the time to stop and to reflect and to allow what wants to come up from psyche is really a gift. It's an enormous gift, and it can bring tears, and it can also bring joy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of what I find meditative about it, or, you know, it connects me to some type of awareness that, because I think that sometimes is how I personally process feelings about things that may be harder to process in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So So I started to tell you a little bit about this, but your book was, it was really interesting. I got an email from your publisher about your book coming out. And my first response was more of a personal response, more so than kind of a professional one, because I had this funny thing happen. I've always been a person who likes a journal, you know, kind of on and off, but I pretty consistently have written in journals for most of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's usually just about my current problems and just the day-to-day things happening in my life. But last summer, so about a year before, a little over a year before my 50th birthday is coming up in September, I had this flashbulb moment when I was in my kitchen of this. It almost appeared all at once. You know how people talk about this sometimes as they write? I just had this really strong sense of something from my past, and I had this urge to write about it. And so it sort of just came out in one piece. And since then, I've been doing more writing about that past, about my childhood and about certain experiences I had. And I had never really done that before. And I don't know if it has anything to do with my just where I am in my life in middle age and turning 50 soon and my kids getting older and that kind of thing. Sure. Or not, but it just feels to me like it's not a coincidence that this is happening at this point in my life. And I was wondering if you could make sense of that for me.
Sure. And I love the image that you just had, this psychic dump in a sense, which would be a great way to start writing about it, that you're in the kitchen and what's going on in the kitchen. And then all of a sudden you have this infusion of life.
That's exactly what I did. That's so funny that you say that. I wrote about that experience as the starting place and then like kind of flashback.
Sure. Yeah. Well, a lot of people take memoir classes when they're turning 50. And I think it's because, you know, as we get to midlife, we are looking back at what are the patterns in our life that we either want to keep or we want to take a good look at and see if we want to change those. So, you know, what has come before and what do I want for the next 50 years? So you're right at the initiation place.
Right on schedule.
Right on schedule. Yeah, I have a student who came into class right around her 50th birthday. And she's been writing about growing up in England after World War II with a mother and a grandmother who had survived two world wars. And when you think about women who survived those two world wars, you know, what did they learn about being mothers? What did they learn about being women? They were too traumatized, basically, to mother. And what my student was looking at was, how do we mother? And really looking at the cultural ramifications of her particular history. So it's individual, but it's also collective. You know, what are the historical collective aspects that informs a person's memoir? And what she has come to understand, or at least to think about, is what did she come in to mend in her family? You know, instead of thinking, oh, my mother wasn't a good mother, it's beginning to realize what the circumstances were in her particular family, in her particular country, and how that has affected the generations that come after. So one of the things I love about memoir writing is, as I said just a little while ago, it's not just your personal story. It really has to look at the universal aspect of the story and look at the cultural historical aspect of the story.
You know, that's the perfect segue to talk a little bit about the themes of myths and archetypes in your book. Your book is called Mythmaking. So mythological elements are strong. And in the book, I think you kind of have it organized along mythological themes and archetypes, these kind of universal human experiences. You mentioned as we were getting ready to start the interview that your earlier book, The Heroine's Journey, has been around a while, and it's been translated into 20 languages. I mean, it, to me, it speaks to the universality of it. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that. What are these themes, and how do these come into play with individual memoirs?
Well, first of all, just to define our archetypes. An archetype is an invisible primary pattern in the psyche common to all human beings. And so they are recurrent themes that we see in myths and to some degree fairy tales. And so you have themes like birth or origins, fall from grace, fall from innocence, the journey, the mother-daughter relationship, the father-son relationship, the descent, betrayal, death. All of these themes exist throughout myths, throughout cultures around the world. The Cinderella story, there's 700 different variations of that. So these themes, when I was first teaching memoir writing and listening to my students' work, I started to think, oh, these are the same themes that exist in myths, particularly looking at the work of Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces. He was looking at the domains of myth. Who am I? Who are my people, or what's my family? What's my journey, and what's my purpose? And so I started to listen to my students' work through those particular lenses. And if you look across many, many memoirs, many of them answer those questions. For an example, who am I? In a sense, that's why memoirists write. They're trying to figure out who am I. But there are specific memoirs like Flor Fernandez Barrios wrote a memoir called Blessed by Thunder, which is her origin story in a sense, because she was born in a thunder and lightning storm in Cuba. And that knocked out all the lights in the hospital. And her grandmother, Patricia, who was a curandera, which is a healer, she started praying to Saint Teresa, the little flower, saying, if you help us with this birth, I will dedicate this child to you to become a curandera or a healer. So, I mean, that's an extraordinary origin story about birth. What happened was she was born. She was named for the little flower. She's named Flor. And she, for the first 13 years of her life, her grandmother taught her the healing herbs and rituals. Now, at 13, her family escaped from Cuba and moved to the United States. And of course, at 13, she didn't want to be doing rituals and herbs. So she wanted to assimilate. But the interesting thing is she ends up being a psychotherapist. So she ends up being a healer. And that's her personal myth from that origin story of who am I? And there's many memoirs like Danny Shapiro wrote Inheritance, which is a memoir about her coming to understand at age 54 that her father that she grew up with was not her birth father. And so she goes on a search for her birth father. I could go on and on. Jeanette Winterson, who wrote Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal, she's a British writer, and she was adopted. And she writes about the wound of adoption. And she also writes about the fact that her birth mother rejected her because she was gay. That's where the title comes from, Why Be Happy When You Could Become Normal? So, I mean, so many of, and I'm just talking about who am I? But throughout my book, I'm also looking at memoirs that reflect the themes of who are my people, what's my journey, what's my purpose. That's the first part of the book. And then the second part of the book, I'm looking at particular archetypes like home and belonging, the body and the wounded body, exile, loss, and spirituality as archetypes that we see in particular memoirs.
We all know there are trade-offs in life, like having to drive a little further to save on gas or groceries. But when it comes to your health, you shouldn't have to trade off. So don't go back to that one doctor who's always late and rushes through your appointment just because they're close by or they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, insurance, literally no trade-offs here because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. My kid's pediatrician is retiring this summer, so you can bet I will be using ZocDoc to find someone new who we all love and trust. So go to ZocDoc.com/POTC and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/POTC. ZocDoc.com/POTC.
Small behaviors can make a big difference in our health and well-being. Most of us work so many hours each week that we should think about how our work habits affect our bodies. Being able to stand sometimes while I work has made a huge difference for me. Uplift Desks has created high-quality office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. My Uplift standing desk allows me to easily transition from sitting to standing while I work with just the push of a button. I feel so much better than when I sit all day, and it helps me recharge to change positions when I get tired in the afternoon. In addition to standing desks, Uplift offers ergonomic office seating, storage systems, even walking treadmills for your desk. You can get free shipping with no hassles, free 30-day returns and return shipping, and a 15-year warranty. Remember, by supporting our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast. Visit UpliftDesk.com/POTC for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/POTC to get 5% off your entire order. I loved how you tied in these modern day memoirs. Some of them I've read, and I have to say my list of to read books is now much longer because some of them I had never heard of and just sound really fascinating. But even just thinking about, you know, Cheryl Strayed's book where she hikes the Pacific Coast Trail, which many people have read, but to tie that to this idea of the hero's journey or the heroine's journey, to tie, you know, Joan Didion's book, which I also read about loss when she lost her husband, and tying that to that universal experience of loss. I just loved how you found the universal and the myths within these stories from people's lives. It was really cool to think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, I loved Year of Magical Thinking, Joan Didion, because it really does parallel the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, because the day that they get married, Orpheus and Eurydice, Eurydice is bitten by a snake and dies. And so she goes into the underworld, and Orpheus is heartbroken. And he makes the journey from life. He makes the descent to Hades and pleads with Hades and Persephone that he might be able to take Eurydice back to Earth. And they are touched because he's the great bard, the great singer of the ancient Greeks. And so Hades says, yes, you can bring her back to life, but there's one condition, and the condition is that she needs to follow you. You need to go first. She needs to follow you. And if you turn around to make sure that she's following you, she will be reabsorbed by the underworld. And so he starts the journey out, And just about he's getting to the light, he turns around, and then, of course, she dies again. And I was thinking about that with Joan Didion's book because, first of all, she calls it the year of magical thinking. And those of us who have experienced a deep loss like that, we're always hoping that the loved one will come back. And Didion said she couldn't get rid of John's shoes because he would need them when he came back. So, I mean, the way she writes it, to me, completely paralleled the myth.
I just got like chills when you're talking about that because you can relate to that sense of just that such a strong desire for the person to come back, and you feel like you, if you do everything, there's that bargaining, right?
Right.
Like, if I do this, if I do that, if I'm a good person, if I, you know, that you feel like maybe you can have that power.
Yeah, exactly. And she writes about, she says, I did the Catholic ritual, I did the Episcopal ritual. You know, she names all of them, but he still didn't come back. And then, of course, she had to deal with the death of her daughter after that. So, yeah, so many, when you were talking about Cheryl Strayed before, not only does her journey parallel the heroine's journey, but it also looks at the Demeter Persephone myth, the mother-daughter myth, and the daughter longing for the mother. And that's what she's writing about on her journey. And she embodied, in a sense, she embodied her memoir by taking all that time to hike the trail. And she wasn't a hiker. And she wasn't a backpacker, but she made that sacrifice to heal herself.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about Joseph Campbell, who has written many books on mythology and myths. And when I was young, I remember I was a senior in high school, and then into college, I was really into The Power of Myth. I remember reading it and just being really intrigued by it. And I still think about it a lot. I mean, The Power of Myth is one of those books that has really stayed with me. And right. I'm just curious, because you knew him, you had studied
Joseph
Campbell. And I'm just curious, you know, he passed away, I can't remember exactly when, but a while back. I was just wondering if you could say a few words about him and
sure.
what that was like to study under him.
Well, it was extraordinary. He used to come out to California, I don't know how many times. But anyway, he would come out to what was called the Human Relations Institute, which is now Pacifica Graduate Institute. And he would come out for an extended weekend, and he would, in a workshop setting, he would tell different myths and from all the different cultures, which was so exciting. As you know from probably watching Bill Moyers, The Power of Myth, Joseph Campbell was an amazing storyteller. And I had the good fortune of leading the meditations before his lectures. So I got to know him well. And when I started working on the heroine's journey, I went back to New York, I think it was 1981, to show him my monomyth, my diagram of the heroine's journey. And he famously said, Maureen, women don't need to make the journey because that's the place that everyone is trying to get to. And I think what he meant was that is the mythological place in terms of the feminine. That everyone is trying to get to. But I was talking about women of my generation and the fact that those of us who were out there having full-time jobs, doing the hero's journey, it wasn't working for us very well. And that what we were really needing was a way to think about healing the deep feminine on both a personal and a collective level. So, he was very gracious, but his response really inspired me to write the book. And it took another 8 years for me to finish that book.
Well, I was wondering about that because I loved your book on memoir so much that I started reading the heroine's journey. And I was really struck by that sense that women were left out of the traditional, you know, quote, hero's journey, and that it doesn't feel satisfying to get that answer. Like, oh, well, women, there's no journey there. That doesn't ring true. I was wondering if you wrote the book as a reaction to that feeling.
Oh, definitely. I was pretty upset by that.
Could you, I know that you have a whole book on this topic, so, you know, I'm kind of asking you to nutshell something pretty complicated here, but could you say a little bit more about what is unique and important specifically about the heroine's journey?
Well, the focus really is on healing of the deep feminine, because the beginning of the journey, the first stage, is the separation from the feminine, which so many women experience as little girls, a separation from their body, a separation from their dreams and their intuition, and maybe a separation from the mother psychologically or spiritually. And then we move into the next stage, which is an identification or over-identification with the masculine, where oftentimes we see the masculine as more powerful, which it is still in our culture. And then we go through stages of trials, and those could be the regular trials that everyone goes through in terms of development into adulthood. But for women, it's also looking at the myth of inferiority, looking at an attachment to the other, you know, always looking for the other, whether it's another human or it's an ideology or it's politics or it's spirituality, to complete us. So going through those different trials and then feeling a real sense of spiritual aridity from working so hard in the outer world that we begin to lose a connection to the inner world. What I was looking at was, how do women reclaim any of the qualities that they split off from in the separation from the feminine? And healing the wounded masculine, each one of us has some aspect of our masculine nature that's wounded, and identifying that for ourselves, the last stage, the sacred marriage between the masculine and feminine, realizing that we don't throw anything away, but we bring more aspects of ourself to the light and to balance. Now, that was a very quick definition of the heroine's journey. But I think so many women responded to it because they knew that they had an early separation from the feminine because of the culture, you know, not necessarily because of their own personal history, but certainly because of the culture.
Yeah, it's like people get cut off from their full humanity, from themselves, because of these systems we live in. And actually, as you're talking, I'm thinking this applies somewhat to men too, just this sense of expectation and having to tune back into themselves and reclaim their full humanity. So even though this is specifically toward the feminine and women who have been left out of the myths, it too has some universal elements, right? Kind of, because we're all in these systems of power that affect all of us.
Right. And whenever I give a talk, the men have their hands up immediately saying, that's not just a woman's journey, that's mine. And I've never said it's just a woman's journey. I've said it's the journey of the feminine.
Mm, yeah. And to think of it in that term, like feminine and masculine in that term, we all have both of those elements.
Right. To more or less developed.
Interesting. So fascinating. There's so much more we could talk about, as you said, but I do want to get a little bit more into some of the nuts and bolts for people who are listening and feeling inspired around getting started with the writing process. Because in addition to writing about the myths and the examples of memoir, you also offer a very helpful guide for how to start. And so to begin, if someone was listening to this and wanted to start doing this type of writing, where would they begin?
Yeah, where to start a memoir?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. People think when they approach memoir, oh, you know, I don't have a big life, so why should I write a memoir? And I always tell people it's because you do have a life and you are examining your life. People also think, well, I've got to write about something big. There's a memoirist whose name is Sven Burkertz, and he said when he started writing memoir, he thought he was supposed to look at the big episodes in his life, whether it was moves or geography or jobs or relationships or fatherhood or divorce. And he found that it's just the small things to look at. And that's what I always tell my students, you know, allow a memory or an image that wants to come up from psyche to be explored, no matter what that image is. I've been exploring the image of the tiny, tiny little roses that used to grow next to my house when I was growing up in New Jersey, because that was a safe place for me. It was my hiding place next to the house. And just from those tiny little roses, those pink roses, where I could smell them, I could see them, I could touch them, the texture, you know, other memories are evolving from there at the time when I was 11 that I haven't thought about for years and years. So it's just a matter, I always tell students, follow the image or follow the memory. Try not, as I said earlier, not to have an agenda. Just take it where it wants to go.
So just whatever sparks something, some sort of memory or a feeling or something, and just start writing about that?
Yeah, just start. Okay. Well, get yourself there. You know, write it with as much detail as you can, because the emotional memory comes out of detail. So look at all of your senses of sight, smell, sound, touch, and get yourself in the scene and see where it wants to take you. When students say, well, I have no ideas, then I always say, well, imagine your five-year-old feet. Look down at your five-year-old feet. Notice what shoes you're wearing, or are you barefoot? And what does that five-year-old, where is she or he? You know, what is the environment? What's going on in his or her life? What does she long for? You know, just start with an image and see where it goes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, I'm really glad you said something about that it doesn't have to be anything big.
Right.
I think sometimes people would think, well, my life is so boring. I never, you know, I'm not a movie star. I never did anything that no one else has ever done before. You know, a lot of the best memoirs, though, I think are ordinary people who are writing about just their life, but in an interesting way. And yeah. So you wouldn't let someone get dissuaded by feeling like their life is too boring.
No. I mean, what is boring about a life? I mean, lives are not boring. Maybe it's a small life, then you write about a small life. If it's a big life, you figure out, what am I really writing about? You know, what's my narrative question? Because you're not just, and I talk about this in myth making, you have to craft your memories. You're not just saying, well, this happened. That might be an interesting journal entry, but it's not going to be a crafted piece of memoir. So, you know, you have to look at your own character. Like, what does your character do? What does your character think? If I was looking at my character, I would have to describe her, how she looked, you know, what her dialogue was. I mean, there's so many different elements of memoir writing that it's a discipline, a discipline craft, and it's important to study it and to really pay very close attention when you are reading memoirs by people like Joan Didion or Cheryl Strayed or James McBride. I mean, there's so much for us to learn.
Yeah. And I have noticed that as I write, and I'm not really planning to do anything with the writing that I'm doing necessarily. You know, it's not, I'm really just writing this for myself and just as an exercise. But I definitely have that voice that thinks, you know, who cares? You know, what do you have to say? But the more you get into those details, you know, they always say in writing, like, show, not tell. So when you get into those details, it sort of unfolds, like you're showing something through just the memory itself. And
absolutely.
The elements of your particular life. And so there's always something there you can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I had this one student, Jackie, who at 80 said to me, you know, when I first started writing memoir, I thought, who am I to write? And she said when she started remembering about when she first met her husband and the travels that they took and the children. And she said, now I understand that my life had value. She said, I didn't really experience the value that my life had until I wrote it down. And that gave me so much pleasure, you know, to be able to say, my life has value.
I love that. There's also something about how memoir captures a time and a place. I think you were giving the example earlier of these women who were mothers during a war. Yeah. And I just think about, as I've been sort of doing a little bit, dabbling a little bit with this in my own life, this sense of how things have changed in the world around me as I've gone from birth to, you know, from the last quarter of the 1900s to the first quarter of the 2000s, and how the world has changed. And that's an interesting story in and of itself that's reflected in my life.
Yeah, and you're bringing up, there's a wonderful memoir about the hurricane, Katrina's hurricane, called The Yellow House by Sarah Broom. And that, of course, is quite historical, but it's also mythic because her family home of, I think her mother had, I guess, eight children. The home was completely destroyed because of the hurricane, which dispersed the whole family. And so here we have, you know, a climate event that affects certainly affected a whole community, but affected this family to such a degree that she writes about the fact that she really couldn't leave her mother or the Yellow House. It kept bringing her back, even though it didn't exist anymore. You know, so there's that whole mythic aspect or theme of home and belonging and attachment to the mother that comes out of a climate event. So, yes, I mean, memoirs are, to me, very exciting because the good ones do reflect what's going on in the culture.
Well, one of the things that your book offers that is really helpful for people who want to try this out are some really terrific prompts along the lines of some of these themes and myths and archetypes and questions that really get you thinking. So another thing you can do to get started is to just take a look at some prompts. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to give a couple of the prompts that you offer.
Sure.
Just as an example. And I'll tell you, as I was reading your book, I kept setting it down because I would read a prompt and I'd have something just pop into my own mind. And I'd want to stop and just jot down a couple of thoughts I was having because they really kind of captured something just automatically.
That's great. That's great. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah,
so thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And the prompts exist at the end of every chapter.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So the chapters have these themes and then some ideas for crafting your memoir and then some prompts. And so one of them, which was about, I think about the journey, if I remember right, the prompt was, what obstacles have you faced along your journey? How did you overcome them?
Yeah. 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 That comes right out of the heroine's journey. Because I did a workbook, the Heroine's Journey workbook, and that's one of the questions, you know, because we are always facing adversaries in our life externally as well as internally.
Yeah, and I think everyone has something to say about that because, of course, we've all had obstacles and they are, you know, you could think about that, just those old myths and stories and fairy tales and how there's always a challenge. They'd be pretty boring if they didn't have something.
Right.
Obstacles along the way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The other one was the chapter on home and the example. So the prompt was, what does an image of home evoke for you?
Yeah.
And just how powerful that is. Like you could just write about your image of home and what does the word home mean to you? That can be a complicated one for people.
Oh, yeah. Particularly now with so many people unhoused.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that idea that a home is not just the building itself, it might be a person or a sense of home or something that you're longing for and don't have or something that you've lost or has changed. And yeah, there's a lot to that one.
Yeah, the whole spirit of home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any final words for us to wish people who might be interested in this? Anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up for today?
I think we covered a lot. I would just say, don't be scared. You know, just put your pen to paper or your fingers to the keyboard and let yourself have fun with it. And writing and publishing are two different things. You know, a lot of people come to workshops or classes thinking, oh, I want to write a book. Well, that can oftentimes get in the way. You know, get your memories down first and see where they take you because the way we start is not going to be the way that we end. I wrote a memoir about my relationship with my son, who was challenged with bipolar illness and substance abuse. And I went into the writing of that book thinking, oh, you know, I'll figure out treatment for him. I'll find, you know, the magic treatment, the magic cure. And what I ended up with at the very end of the book is that this was his journey, and I was interfering with his journey by becoming, you know, too attached to my own agenda. That's mm-hmm. why I always say to people, try to let go of your agenda, because it will get in the way of your writing.
I love that. I think this is so important what you're saying. Just write, have fun with it. This is not a homework assignment. There's no grade. You don't have to be a great writer to do this. It's more about exploring yourself. And you don't have to get an A+. You don't have to publish it. Just write.
Right. Yeah. And have curiosity, because as you excavate your own life, you'll begin to understand other people's lives too. And as you read contemporary memoirs, you'll become intrigued by these characters. So have fun with it.
Wonderful. And where can people find you online and find out more and find out about your workshop that's coming up in April?
Yeah, thank you very much. My website is maureenmurdoch.com, and Murdoch is M-U-R-D-O-C-K. And on my website, that gives information about the Women's Memoir Writing Workshop in Santa Fe at Hotel Santa Fe, April 25th through the 27th. And all the information is on my website. So, and then also Pacifica Graduate Institute offers a 9-month memoir course called Writing Down the Soul, which I teach in. And then the other thing that in particular women writers should know about is the International Women's Writing Guild, which is IWWG.org, which has courses all year round. I'm doing a course on having the courage to write what you never thought you would put down on paper, teaching that March 13th on Zoom. So all the information about those three things in particular are there.
Oh, this is so exciting. I'm going to check those out for myself for sure. And we'll link on our show notes for today's episode to your website and to some of these resources, because I think if anybody found this conversation inspiring, they'll definitely want to get started. And these sound fantastic.
Great. Okay.
And just to remind everyone, your new book is Myth Making, Self-Discovery, and the Timeless Art of Memoir. Highly recommend. Maureen, thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed your work so much and enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you for listening to Psychologists Off the Clock. If you enjoy our podcast, you can help us out by leaving a review or contributing on Patreon.
You can get more psychology tips by subscribing to our newsletter and connecting with us on social media.
We'd like to thank our podcast production manager, Chadine Stout-Williams.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to be a substitute for mental health treatment. If you're looking for mental health treatment, please visit the resources page of our website, offtheclockpsych.com.